Good afternoon, members, and welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. It's good to see everyone around today. All right, so while quorum is present, so we'll officially start this meeting. The one and only agenda item on our for bills today is House File 1860, Representative Woodard. Before we move forward with that bill, I do want to make just two very brief introductions. During the interim, we had one committee hearing, but we want to make sure everyone recognizes our two new staff members and they get a chance to introduce themselves. So, Mr. Withers.
My name is Jody Withers. I'm the committee administrator for Education Finance now, formerly with the House Judiciary Committee, and pleased to be here.
And in addition, we're bringing back the DFL brought back Ms. Patrick, to the committee, and then there's a new Republican researcher from the majority. Want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Emily Nessie, and like the chair mentioned, I'm GOP researcher coming from the Civil Law and the Jobs Committee.
So, well, welcome to the committee, and you guys brought food to the committee, I assume, on the first day, correct? No? Okay. That'll take care of that on Thursday. All right, Representative Woodard, House File 1860. What we'll do here, Representative and members of the committee, is we'll allow the author to have his presentation with the authors involved. We'll give a chance for public comment. Those who are not paid to be here will go first, and then supporters or those with concerns about the bill will speak. At the conclusion of public testimony, then we'll move to questions and comments from members of the committee. So, Representative Woodard, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1860 attempts to remedy a situation in which a local public school district has an operating levy for public school students within the district. And today, when that operating levy is spread out amongst public school districts or public school students, it does not include our charter schools. So House File 1860 seeks to remedy that by allowing for a similar per pupil or the exact same per pupil to go to the charter school district as was passed by the taxpayers. The intent of this is that when taxpayers are looking at public school students, they don't differentiate between charter public school students and traditional public school students. So when we pass a referendum, we include all public school students in that per pupil funding formula. So this just seeks to say that if a public school student chooses to go to a charter public school, that they would receive that same operating levy per pupil. So, Mr. Chair, that's a pretty simple bill, and I know simple bills require great debate, and we've got a few folks who would like to testify in favor of this, and if you're okay with that, we'll invite those folks up to testify.
Absolutely. Representative Woodard, bring forward your testifiers you wish to have here. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. First, thank you for the opportunity to make a few remarks this afternoon regarding House File 1860. Our association favors this legislation for three simple reasons: equity, fairness, and justice. First, let me talk about equity. There's a growing inequity or disparity in funding between the funding for public school students who attend charter schools and those who attend traditional school districts. In 2010, Ball State University released a study that looked at revenue sources and funding levels in charters and district schools in every state of the union. What it found is that during the 2006-2007 school year, on a statewide basis weighed for charter school enrollment, that charter school students were receiving 12.9% less in per pupil revenue than their counterparts in traditional districts. The study also looked at the disparity in funding in St. Paul and Minneapolis and compared it to the disparity that existed in 2002-2003. In St. Paul, the disparity in funding grew from 9.1% in 2000-2003 to 13.4% in 2006-2007. In Minneapolis, it was even higher at 13.4% in 2002-2003 and 21.1% in 2006-2007. Since 2006-2007, these disparities have grown even wider. So what accounts for this growing inequity in funding between students who attend traditional public schools and charter public schools? There seems to be two reasons. First is the fact that the responsibility for funding of education has been shifting from state revenues to local revenues, and that charter schools currently are funded with state and federal revenues only. They do not receive funds generated at the local level. Second, at the same time that this shift has occurred, there has been a phased-out elimination of the referendum equalization formula that the state provided for charter schools. While that equalization aid never actually was equal to the per pupil amount generated in local operating levy referendums, it was an effort to ensure some modicum of equity. While the enactment of House File 1860 will not completely end the disparity of funding for students who attend charter schools, it will make a significant difference in making education funding more equitable in jurisdictions where traditional districts have operating levies, which is more and more districts every year. Second, there is the issue of fairness. When a traditional district figures out the potential revenue that an operating levy will generate, they count all the students in the district, no matter what public school they attend, including those who attend a charter school. So revenue is generated from local property taxes for educating all students who reside in the district. Yet if a student chooses to attend a different type of public school, a public charter school, that revenue generated for his or her education by the local community does not follow that pupil to the school of their choice. This raises an important and basic public policy question. Is it fair to ask citizens to increase their local taxes for education for all the students who reside in their district, and at the same time tell parents and students they have a choice of what public school to attend, and then not have the money raised for those students follow the student because of the choice they made within the public school system? It is hard to comprehend how a system that generates revenue for all students and tells people that they have choices within that system, yet penalizes people for exercising their choice, is a fair funding system. And finally, there is the matter of justice. In recent months, there have been a number of articles that state that because parents and students of low income, minority, and students of limited English ability choose public charter schools in significant numbers, that charter schools are resegregating public schools. Segregation, by definition, is state action. The free choice of parents and children is not state action. So the parents choosing one type of public school over another is not an act of segregation. Charter schools are responding to the need of parents and students. Why else would charter schools in Minnesota average twice the percentage of low-income students as the statewide average? Why else would charter schools in Minnesota enroll an average of twice the percentage of minority students as the statewide average? And why else would charter schools in Minnesota enroll an average of three times the percentage of ELL students as the statewide average? What we have here is not what the critics claim. One could argue, make the argument, that what we do have here, however, is state-sanctioned discrimination in educational funding against public school students and families who choose to exercise their choice of public school. The fact that a significant number of these students are low-income, minority, and limited English proficiency is more than a cause for concern. It is a cause for alarm when we see that many students in these segments have the highest achievement gaps, and the fact that funding for their education is not equal simply because of the educational choice they and their parents have made. House File 1860 will help address this consequences of our funding system with all funding following the student's educational choice does not follow the student to their school of choice. Again, the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools supports 1860 as a step in bringing fairness, equity, and justice in funding for 40,000 public school students who choose to exercise their choice within the public school system of Minnesota.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Woodard, who's your next testifier?
Our next testifier is approaching the bench.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair, committee. My name is Al Fan. I'm the executive director for a nonprofit organization called Charter School Partners. Our mission is to support the improvement of high-quality public education, and we also incubate new charter schools in the Twin Cities region. Thank you for the opportunity to present in front of this committee. We support House File 1860, and I want to just sort of step back a little bit and say that historically, Minnesota has had a very strong record of providing options for families and students. We have a very strong PSEO program. We have the Choice is Yours program. And, of course, Minnesota was the first state to introduce charters into the country. I say that it is time to move away from a system of a good system of choice to a system of good choices. And in order to create good choices for our families and students, we need to make sure that we not only have accountability for charter schools, and we not only have an available talent pipeline, a strong pipeline of talent, but we also have adequate resources, and funding is one of those resources. I support all the claims that Mr. Piccolo just presented. We have also looked at the Ball study. Ball State University is an authorizer in Indiana. They are the only higher ed authorizer in Indiana with 30 schools, a strong track record of supporting charter schools. And their findings do support a large inequity in the funding between charters and district schools, a funding inequity that is growing because of the growing reliance on local dollars to support education. There in Minnesota, we already are seeing inequities between district and charters in terms of the ability of charter schools to access both capital markets and commercial funding. And if we can do anything to try to alleviate that, which I think House File 1860 does try to do, we should provide more resources to the best schools, best public schools in the state, so that they can continue to do the work of educating our students. We have a number of great schools that are closing the achievement gap already. We want to make sure that those schools receive the most resources they can to do that work and continue to close the achievement gap. And let me introduce one of those gap-closing charter schools right now, being led by Mary Donaldson. The name of the school is Concordia Creative Learning Academy.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Good afternoon. Even though you're introduced, please state your name for the record.
Happy New Year. My name is Mary Donaldson. I'm director of Concordia Creative Learning Academy. And it's nice to be back before the favorite committee. You guys are wonderful to present to. You're very welcoming when I'm talking. And I'd like to thank you for your work last year. It's the first opportunity I've had to talk to all of you. The work you did behind closed doors, the July 15 payment, the 16 payments, all that greatly, greatly benefit our schools. And thank you for all you did during that time. I am a director of a charter school on the east side of St. Paul. When I first learned about the levy, I wanted to find out why the levy referendum monies do not come to our school. The first seek to understand before you're understood is what I went on. So I started asking people. I don't get it. Morgan lives right across the street from our school. Kindergarten, first grade, second grade, she went to a traditional school. Third grade through sixth now, she's been at our school. I did not know that the levy dollars did not follow her. And I wanted to find out why. I asked the auditor, that Dennis was at our board meeting last night. He replied very similar to what Eugene said. The funding, the formulas didn't get corrected. I asked a superintendent of a public school. She replied basically as those schools work hard for those referendums. They put a lot of hours to get those passed for their district. And I can relate to that. I spent 26 years in traditional. I worked on a lot of referendums. My comment back was we would be glad to help with those referendums. The third was very blunt, right to my face, is charters waste money. And I didn't, the charter school movement, we get painted with a brush. If one wastes money, we think all of them do, but I think we need to have that money in charters because we are just as accountable as regular charter schools. But then I went to why. Why should charter schools get this money? Mr. Piccolo talked about fairness. I tell my children fair is something that happens in August. What is fair? In our school, we have a saying that fair is not what you want. Fair is what you need. So if this bill is to be a fair bill, why does my school or the charter schools need this money? Why is it a need? I thought of two major reasons. When I was asked last night, why do you need the money, Mary? You have high, your school has high reading scores. They have high math scores. You have high retention. You have high attendance. What do you need more money for? And Blank, there's two reasons. Number one is to provide extra opportunities for my children. And two, the most important thing is because of my staff. It is not Mary Donaldson's school. And I like to present, but I wish they were here to tell you why. It is their school. It is my staff's school. But you need to know that they did not have raises for 5 years. We went from 10% reading to 90% reading, and none of them had a penny raise. Last year we had raises for the first time in 5 years. But that means we cut non-instructional, we cut instructional, we cut field trips, we cut staff and development, we cut other things. So their raises are going back to the kids. So when I talk about why do we need this money, it's to keep them. Because I cannot have a school that's high performing without the staff that's in the school. The second reason is the opportunities. We have high reading and math scores, but as our children go on to high school, we're finding that they are not succeeding because they are not having the opportunities in my school to have foreign language, speech, orchestra, all those things that also round out the whole child. That's what we need the money for, is to provide the same opportunities that if they went to the same school and a traditional that they would find in my school. Many times I'm asked to speak, and I don't know why I am. I think it's because when I was in seventh grade, Mary Palm came to the shy, rather quiet girl and said, "You need to go and participate in the speech competition and do the eulogy on Roberto Clemente." That provided me with 6 years of forensics and drama and one-act play and musicals. Right now, my children don't have that. And I would like this money to go toward them because it is a need that I have and my children do. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Woodard, next up.
We have some representatives from Students First, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Dan Nelson. I'm coming as someone who represents the community of North Minneapolis as a community member and community leader. I live in North Minneapolis, where I run a nonprofit focused on developing young leaders in the community. My wife is a teacher and has taught in both traditional public and public charter schools. And I speak as someone who understands firsthand the effectiveness that charter schools have had in my community. This bill provides a needed fix for Minnesota's public education financing. It ensures that all students receive adequate and equitable funding, regardless of whether they attend a traditional public or a public charter school. It's an issue of fairness, and I urge you to end the exception that allows taxes levied mid-year to be distributed unequally. So we support House File 1860. Three children that I work with, Larisha, Van Shea, and Denzel, and the rest of the kids in North Minneapolis with whom we work, deserve to attend adequately funded schools, whether they go to a public charter or a traditional public school. I distinguish themselves from other kids. They don't distinguish themselves as either I'm a charter school kid or I'm a public school kid. They're just kids. They grow up on the same streets. They face the same issues and same challenges. And they are all trying to have a successful future. They all want to get a diploma and go to college. They don't distinguish themselves. So they should be receiving school funding at an equitable level. Personally, I've seen the impact that several high-performing charter schools have had on the children they serve in North Minneapolis. Kip Stand Academy, where my wife worked, and several of our students attend, Minneapolis Academy in South Minneapolis, where several of our students attend and have attended, AFSA High School in Badness Heights, where some of our kids travel all the way from North Minneapolis to attend because it's such a great school. They've all served our kids diligently. And this bill would provide funding that will allow these charters to increase their positive impact that they've had on the kids that I work with. This piece of legislation is rooted in the belief that all children deserve equal access to an excellent education. Equal funding for all public school students, regardless of the school they attend, is a critical step in the right direction. I know this bill is the right thing to do for hardworking kids like Van Shea at AFSA High School, for young leaders like Larisha at Kip Stand Academy, and for Denzel at Minneapolis Academy, and for the rest of the kids that we work with. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Woodard, do you have any other testifiers?
I'm scanning the crowd to see, but I don't see anybody standing up, Mr. Chair.
All right, well, thank you very much, Representative Woodard. At this point, what we're going to do is we're going to move to the public portion of testimony. Supporters or those who have concerns about the bill, we're going to begin with two people who signed up in advance and are not paid to be here. Mr. and I apologize if I say the name wrong, Bezek, the superintendent of the Elk River School District. Are you here?
Bezek.
I tried. Welcome to the committee, sir, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Dr. Mark Bezek, superintendent of schools, Elk River. As I listen to testimony, I'm trying to think of the right word that I can that describes this legislation to me, and I can't come up with a good one right now. I believe in choice, and I've been in this business for over 30 years. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, with the whole charter movement over the years, I always thought that these were designed for choice, but also to operate in a less expensive way than public education. I have no problem with this legislation if you let me play by their rules. And that's everything from union issues, no school board, PELRA, you name it. Let me play by their rules, and I'll gladly give up this portion of my levy.
Representative Woodard has a bill for that. please continue with your testimony.
Yeah. This is just a few pieces of fact here. As a school district, we're responsible for all the costs to run these levy elections. And, from everything from the mailings to the election judges, I run these things every year. And it costs me about $50,000 to $100,000 a year. Now, that's not the human capital. That's just the hard cost of these. And for me to give up $400,000 every year without any help on that, that's a tough one to swallow. Charter schools build back the issues of special education, but they don't help us with the cross-subsidy. I have about a $10 million a year cross-subsidy that I have to take care of, and we're not getting any help on that end of it. We're responsible for all the transportation associated with the resident students and, the extra piece when there's special care that have to be taken with some of the students for treatment services and what have you. We bear the brunt of all that. We currently have about 700 students. The information you have doesn't include all the kids in our district that are attending charter schools, but we have about 700 this year, and that hits us for about $400,000 of this money that we'd be losing each year. And as our budgets are, they're tight to begin with. As I go back to operating levies, we have to do all the work, and it's very hard to get people out to help with these elections. So again, if we were designed to operate like charter schools, I'd be more than happy to, give this money up in a heartbeat. Any questions?
Thank you very much for your testimony, Doctor. What we're going to do is we're going to conclude. We'll let everyone have their chance to testify, because I know there are some people who drove quite a distance today. We want to make sure we get through that, and then we'll move to the questions from members of the committee. So thank you very much, Doctor. Next, we have Robert Doty, Chief Financial Officer from the Minneapolis School District. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robert Doty, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House File 1860, but wish to thank the author for bringing the bill forward. The bill addresses a legitimate public policy question. Why don't charter schools qualify for referendum levy revenue when state policy allows them to receive referendum equalization aid? Minneapolis Public Schools opposes this bill, House File 1860, in favor of an alternative solution to the same problem, which is addressed in another bill, House File 1460, sponsored by Representative Linda Slocum and others. I believe it is helpful to review the current statutory framework to understand the problem and the solution in a larger context. First of all, charter public schools do not have independent levy authority because they are not local units of government. Secondly, levy authority is a power of government. Levy authority is not a power of private, nonprofit boards of directors who are not accountable to voters and taxpayers through any kind of electoral process. Thirdly, school districts across the state ask their voters to pass operating referenda to increase their local property taxes to fund specific initiatives, such as those related to class sizes, technology, early childhood education, etc., in the schools governed by the elected school board. Charter schools are not among the schools governed by the elected school board by design and choice. Previous legislatures have specified that this ask of voters be made in terms of a specific revenue per unit, per resident pupil unit. This definition includes charter and open enrollment students. Next, we believe House File 1860 breaks this contract with our voters and taxpayers by allocating revenues approved by voters for initiatives within the Minneapolis schools to our competitors in the charter school sector. The actual language of the bill performs this through an indirect means, an aid reduction to school districts and an increase to charters based on the referendum revenue per pupil times charter enrollment. A logical corollary of this position would be to perform the same calculation for all open enrollment, which this bill does not do. Next, traditionally, elected officials prefer to see local property revenue allocated to public purposes in the local jurisdiction overseen by the publicly elected officials who levied the property tax in the first place. House File 1860 represents a break with that public policy consensus. Next, the original authors of the charter school law recognized that charter schools led by private, not-for-profit boards would not have direct access to local government levy authority and revenue. This was and is addressed in current law in four ways. First of all, allowing a transfer of referendum equalization aid, less satisfactory as equalization revenue has lagged, lease aid to compensate for lack of capital bonding and levy authority, special education tuition billback, charters billback excess special education costs of $16.9 million in fiscal year 2009 to their pupils' resident school districts. And finally, district-wide attendance area if a charter elects transportation from the district. Next, House File 1860 seeks readdress for charter schools by amending only one element of the current law compromise. We urge you to reconsider this approach, which addresses just one element of the current law compromise on charter school access to referendum revenue. We urge you to consider initiatives that promote collaboration among and between charter schools and regular school districts. We urge you to give a public hearing to House File 1460 and learn about an approach that addresses this very issue in a manner that regular school districts and charter schools can both approach. I would be happy for you to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir. And like we said, we're going to get through the public testimony, and I hope if you have a chance, please stick around in case members do have questions. Thank you very much for your testimony. At this point, if there are members of the public who are not paid to be here who wish to testify either in favor or voice concerns about the bill, please come forward. I do not have any of those people on my list right now, so just And if again, if you meet that categorization, if you're a real person who is here, please begin to line up behind the author. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
I'm hoping that superintendents are real people.
Yes.
I'm Superintendent Jim Hess, superintendent in Bemidji Public Schools. Thank you, Chair and committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to visit with you about this important issue. I've worked in Bemidji for the past 8 years. Bemidji's home to 3 charter schools, several parochial schools, and nearly 5,000 students who enroll in District 31. I'm going to speak about the impact of this bill on our school system. Passage of HF 1860 would be detrimental to Bemidji Public Schools and is unnecessary. It will result in a loss of over $182,000 to our district and will compound the budgetary problems we face with the seriously flawed formulas in special education and transportation reimbursement, where we are forced to shortchange our district students to pay for state and federally mandated services to charter school students. We currently have a voter-approved operating levy of $501 per pupil. Under current law, our 3 charter schools receive 27% of this, or $134 per pupil. That is the state side of the portion, since our district receives some state aid because we're a low property wealth district. 73% of the operating levy per pupil stays in Bemidji Public Schools, which is about $366. We use this to help pay a portion of our district transportation cross-subsidy and special education cross-subsidy for mandated services to charter school students. Incidentally, school districts with greater property wealth receive little or no state support from operating levies and keep all those levy dollars. They're not required to share portions of them with the charter schools located within their district boundaries. Bemidji schools are required to transport charter school students. Our costs exceed state reimbursement by approximately $575,000 per year. This averages out to be about $111 per pupil. If you multiply that times the 496 charter school students, we lose about $55,432 by transporting charter school children. We're forced to take money from our general fund to make up this difference. It would be less costly for us if we didn't have to transport charter school students, but that's the law. Similarly, in special education, Bemidji schools are forced to subsidize mandated services by more than $3 million per year. Charter schools send us the bills, and we see it subtracted from our state aid with little or no say in the matter. When calculated, our special ed cross-subsidy per pupil amounts to $485 per student. If you multiply $485 per student times the 498 charter school students, it costs us $240,787.85. With the current formula, Bemidji Public Schools are already subsidizing our 498 charter school students to the tune of $55,000 in transportation, $240,000 in special ed. That amounts to $296,000. That's $296,000 out of our district general fund to pay for charter school students' benefit. If these flawed formulas are compounded by HF 1860, we'll lose an additional $182,000, making it a total of $478,660 to support the 3 charter schools that call Bemidji home. This bill, in my opinion, will punish any district that's home to a charter school.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in this? Okay, so now we'll move to the, what's the proper term for the paid people to be here? So first, the compensated people. First on the list that I have is Mr. Lundell. And on deck will be Mr. Grathwall, if he still wishes to testify. And then Ms. Kelleher. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brad Lundell, Executive Director, Schools for Equity and Education. And I just wanted to echo the comments that came from the business manager from the Minneapolis Public Schools and also some of the other comments that have come in opposing this bill. Let me take a little bit different tack. I'm going to talk a lot this session about my hometown of Cannon Falls. It's a district that failed in its referendum last year, and they also have a charter school. Like many districts from Schools for Equity and Education, we are low property wealth, but also don't generate a lot through the categorical formulas. Many districts in Schools for Equity and Education then are forced to go to their voters to kind of take a look at ways to bolster their revenue, and the referendum revenue is the way that they can do that, because they're not very successful in getting some of the state formulas changed to get a more advantageous distribution of revenue in state formulas. In the case of Cannon Falls, where they are looking at a huge number of cuts this year, while their charter school doesn't take a lot of money from the school district, it just exacerbates the problem of them having to cut even more. The thing that I would mention also, and I think that, again, the Minneapolis business manager pointed this out, is we may need to look at this through a more comprehensive lens. I know that referendum politics are very, very difficult. The referendum in and of itself is a blunt instrument of funding, as districts throughout the state have widely varying amounts of referendum revenue, and many districts with low property wealth simply can't generate the amount of dollars to even make it worthwhile to go down that road. One of the things that we've done in the past, and I think this would be something that would help all school districts, is to look at rolling in a portion of referenda. We don't have the state revenue to do that right now, but that would put more money to follow the charter schools from the basic formula. It would reduce reliance on the referendum and would give some districts either low or no amount of referendum revenue more money that they need, and would probably in some cases for preclude them from having to go out looking at referenda. I guess the other thing I would say, and you know, those of us in public education who believe that there needs to be more money in the system, and that's we credit you for doing a lot in last year, in a year that was very, very difficult for the state to face in terms of its budget crisis. We really credit this committee for coming forward and actually increasing the amount of money that went into education. We thank you for that very much. At the same time, do we know how much money is actually needed to fully fund the state's commitment to education across a broad range of operations? And I think that this is the charter discussion needs to be part of that. And I think having that charter discussion as part of a larger discussion is what really needs to happen, instead of these kinds of more narrow initiatives. So with that, I'll stand for questions or turn it over to the next speaker.
Thank you very much. Mr. Grathwall, did you still pass? Well done. Ms. Kelleher.
Can I get a room?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We are an association of elected officials from school districts across the state of Minnesota. And I want to share with you, we had an opportunity to talk to Representative Woodard just ever so shortly. But for us, this really raises the local government concern. And as we reflect on the Constitution, local government, school districts, cities, and counties were incorporated by our state constitution and empowered with the right of taxation. Cities and counties by far have the easier way to do it in a much more non-directed way. School districts have to go to their voters for approval for operating referendums in order to pass them. So really, we're the local government poor stepchild. We are the ones that can only go forward if our local property taxpayers agree. We, as a local government, we're responsible with conducting truth in taxation hearings, walking the public through our budgets. We also ensure the public trust. And for example, when we run an operating referendum, the small community of St. Peter, they had 35 informational hearings from church socials to the Chamber of Commerce talking about what that referendum money would be spent on, where it would go. And that public trust argument for charter schools may not be as reflective and transparent as public schools are made to go forward with. Basically, what if We've got questions about the implementation date also. The 2014, our operating referendums go for up to 10 years. The question would be, with ones that were out there, would this then impede what they were, in fact, enacted by our local taxpayers? How could this impact districts that don't have levy referendums? We all assume there's every school district has an operating referendum across the state of Minnesota. And in fact, 10% of our school districts have none. So if you're an unlucky charter school, certainly it varies greatly across the state, and this would bring the charter schools into that unequal system of relying on property taxes. Basically, we ask you to oppose this in recognition of a local government. The other way to do it is recognize 150 charter schools as independent local government units. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any other members of the public, paid or non-paid, who wish to testify in this bill? It's a race. Who's going to make it first? You know what, Mr. Kernquist, I apologize. I just saw your name on the list and I jumped over it. It was not on purpose. You signed up in advance, and that will be noted the next time you wish to testify. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
No problem, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. And members, Scott Kernquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I will be brief because many of the points I was going to raise have already been mentioned. But you know, I think what is very clear here is that reforming the education funding system is difficult, and especially when you try to tweak a particular part of the formula. And sometimes when you attempt to do that, it fails to recognize historic compromises that were made to arrive at that formula. And this is a great example of that. As has been noted, there really was very little disagreement when the charter school law was adopted originally, that non-elected entities should not have the ability to levy or expend property tax dollars. But then there was also recognition that, okay, if we're not going to allow charter schools to have access to that revenue, what do we do to balance it? And so the law was written so that, number one, charter schools could get the aid portion of those referendum dollars. They did get access to lease aid to help because they didn't have the capital levy ability. And then two other important pieces were that the school district was made responsible for the special education cost of those charter school students, and also the school district was made responsible for the transportation cost of those charter school students. And I think, as you all know, the amount of money that the state provides in those two areas, special education and transportation, is not sufficient to cover those costs. And so, in effect, school districts are already using operating referendum dollars to fund those shortfalls. And so the basic premise that charter school students aren't benefiting right now under current law from operating referendum dollars is simply not true. They already are benefiting from local referendum dollars. Just to give you a quick few hard numbers of what the legislation would mean, and this would be revenue reductions for some of my member school districts. Milka Hennepin would see a $1.13 million reduction in their revenue. Stillwater, $969,000. That's a district that just lost their referendum in November and is looking at $10 to $12 million in reductions heading into next year. Osseo, about a $335,000 reduction. Rosemont Apple Valley, $193,000. Eden Prairie, $196,000. Superintendent Bezik already told you it's close to $400,000, I think, for Elk River. So as you can see, it's real reductions that school districts would be facing under this legislation. So I will stop there, Mr. Chairman and members, but we would urge you to oppose this legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill before we go to... Oh, I'm sorry. I'd say it's still spring training. We're warming up here. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and I will be very brief. We share many of the same concerns. As you know, St. Paul was not unlike North Branch not a few years ago, where we actually had two referendum attempts that both failed, and including one where the board offered to resign if they didn't meet the goals of the referendum and spend the money as they had laid out in the discussion. We finally did pass one in 2003. We had to have very specific conversations with our community about what we were going to do with the money and how we were going to spend it. We did increase it one time where we added money to fund our four-year-old kindergarten program and our all-day kindergarten program, and we continue to spend $6.1 million on ELL, additional ELL teachers and special education teachers, as both of those programs had been cut. And to provide more money for our middle and high school kids to address the new math requirements that were put into statute. We do not have any general control over charter schools. We are not an author. We will not become a new authorizer for charters, and so we will not be able to provide any accountability in that. The other thing, and I was taking just a brief look at the Ball State report. The Ball State report looks at just the revenue sources that are eligible through the funding formulas, and it doesn't account for the tuition billing that has been raised earlier. In the case of Concordia Academy, they billed the district $440,000 of special education revenue last year. That was up from $277,000 in 08. And when you calculate in the amount that they can bill us and include it in their expenditures, if you look at the expenditure reports from the Department of Education, Concordia Academy spends $13,434 per pupil compared to $13,001 in St. Paul when you take a look at all the revenue that's available to the school.
Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify before we go to the department on this? Wish to testify on this? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Speaker and representatives. My name is Holly Marsh. I am a senior at Avalon High School. We are a public charter school in the city of St. Paul. We're project-based, and for the past 10 years, we have been changing students' lives. And so I strongly encourage you all to support this bill. The reason is very simple. I hope to one day change the world, potentially as an elected member of the House of Representatives or of the U.S. Senate. And it hurts me to know that the opportunity to attend my school, a choice that my parents and I made, is not bringing in the income that my school needs to adequately support my education. I have had opportunities at my school that I don't believe could have been supported by the traditional school model. I don't have anything against school districts, but there needs to be a change in education, and it starts with adequately funding the schools that are able to make these changes for students. So for the sake of fairness and school opportunity, I really hope that you would support this bill. Thank you.
And thank you. And I know I speak for the whole committee when we say thank you for your testimony, and that when you run in the office, we wish you, in the future office, we wish you good luck unless you run against one of us. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry with the Department of Education. First off, I just want to thank Representative Woodard. I want to thank you, Chair, and the members of the committee for starting off the committee with an interesting topic for discussion. And just so you know, from our perspective, we remain committed to working with all of you this session, moving forward on this issue, on other issues as well. We did want to raise a few concerns that we did have with this bill, mostly around some of the equity that it raises. A lot of this has already been raised. I don't want to take too much time in repeating it, but I do want to raise some of the issues. Right now, the way the funding system works between the charter schools and the traditional public schools is there is a balance between the fact that the charters do not receive the levy portion of the operating referendum, and as we talked with the special ed tuition billing, they are able to bill back the school districts to recover that cost. So we think if this legislation moves forward, that is going to be an issue that we need to address, because it's creating another inequity in that portion of the formula. The second equity issue involves the equity of funding for students who enroll in a district or charter school located outside of the resident district. This is only for students who move to charter schools within the school district. It doesn't apply to school districts who have open enrollment. So districts and charter schools that have high populations of students from outside the district might see some inequity in this area. And the final point just to bring up is also on the transition. This was brought up as more of kind of the accountability issue, as far as when districts are going out for a referendum and saying what they can bring forward. There could, with the transition of this money, we think there should be a transition process in place. that would allow either the school board to go back or the charter school to go back to the district to offset the costs of losing the money as they go to the charter schools.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any other members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony portion of the bill and we'll move to questions and comments from members of the committee. Are there any questions or comments? Representative Greiland. And first of all, I know I speak when at the committee when I say congratulations on your announcement. You seem to have a little bigger smile than you normally do in committee. And in all seriousness, Representative Greiling, we want to thank you for your service, and you will be missed.
Thank you very much, and you can say it again when we adjourn the day before we have our last committee meeting, because it's a very freeing experience to be leaving this place. And it's a heady experience too, because you get great emails and phone calls and hugs and comments from everybody that's is almost as if you had died and they were at your funeral. back to this bill, I do think it's interesting, as Mr. McHenry said, but I actually, in its current form, am strongly opposed to this bill. I think that this week is Choice Day, and Representative Erickson was kind enough to mention me as an early charter school supporter. I think Representative Mariani is the only one here, actually, when charter schools passed. When I came 20 years ago, we were fighting off having that law repealed. So I've always been a strong choice supporter for public school choices with public money. But like some of the testifiers, because we did refight that battle in my first term, I remember clearly that the deal was charter schools got less money because they would need less money because they didn't have the rules and regulations of charter schools. And I have made this comment in this committee before that it seems to me over the last 20 years they have discovered, like all schools, that there isn't enough funding, and so they keep wanting one more thing and one more thing and one more thing. And I don't blame them, because we haven't kept up with the general per pupil amount and the other formulas for all schools. And so they are just one of all types of schools that don't have enough funding. And this bill is symptomatic of that, but I don't believe it is the answer to then fund this bill by taking it from other districts who also don't have enough money. It's just a zero-sum game, and I don't think we want to be party to it. I think it does point out, though, that there isn't enough money for schools, that when you rely on local levy referenda property taxes, it isn't fair for kids, and we should have a system that's fair for all kids. It points out that we prorate special education funding. We don't fund transportation like we should. You know, it has a lot of lessons here, but they apply to all kids, not just the kids in charter schools. So I can't support this bill in its current form. But everybody here knows I do support funding properly our schools for kids wherever they live, all around the state. Thank you.
And staff is very nervous, so I have to do this because they're afraid I'm going to forget. Representative Greiling moves approval of the minutes from the May 3rd meeting. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. And then Representative Downey moves approval of the November 2nd. Minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. And then also, members, if you take a look at your folders, if there's anything that you want to keep in your save folder, please take that away. Apparently, we're getting new folders and stuff, and there's quite a bit of material. So if you do have items in your save material you wish to save for future hearings, please take those out, remove those from your folder, and then put them in at the Thursday meeting. Is that correct? Okay, thank you. Any other questions and comments from the committee? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In full disclosure, having been on the school board, having been a treasurer, I understand the costs incurred, transporting, and I think it's very fair to, I'd ask Representative Woodard to, be open to looking at that mitigation of incremental cost, past the first child cost. And the cost of the elections brought up by Superintendent Bezik. If you hold them on general elections, you don't have to pitch in and cover all the cost of the judge and et cetera. I think someone has a bill in regards to that. But what really bothers me on this is getting paid for students that you're not educating. I see two fair ways of doing this. One, if you only mean it to count for the students that are attending your school, then don't collect for students that aren't attending your schools, or have the money go with the student. 14 of 15 referendums around my area passed this past cycle, and I supported several of those because they needed it. One district in the last decade has lost 30% of their enrollment just from demographics, and each district is individual, and the people care about education. But you're asking for per pupil and funding the education of students that live in a district. Well, I don't care if they go to North High School, South High School, or Central. I care about their education and funding it. And if I vote for it, I think the money should go to those students. I think it is fair to look at, incurred cost, and I think that's a reasonable discussion, maybe in another bill. But, we're here, I'm here for the education of students, and I can support this bill, and I'm sure there'll be amendments on the process of, if I vote to fund per pupil, I'm not voting only if they go to this school. I'm voting for helping the kids in my community have a better education. And so that's why I'm going to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Palm. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought you were going to forget me again this year, but that's remarkable that you didn't put me in the Mr. Kronquist category as well. I appreciate that.
Is that what we call it now, the Kronquist category?
That's it. That's it, Mr. Chair. Well, I got a bit to say on this, and Representative Woodard, thank you for bringing the bill forward, because as Representative Grinling stated, it truly does emphasize the lack of funding that we have had for all of our K-12 kids and early childhood also in the state of Minnesota for the past decade. And in fact, with inflation adjusted, our schools have taken about a 13% decline in funding over the last decade. And so this highlights it, and I appreciate that. And then Representative Kwan mentioned that 14 out of 15 of the referenda from votes in his area passed this past November. And in fact, it was a very high percentage. I don't recall the percentage, but it was in the 70-80% of successful referendum votes. And truly, that is the citizens of the state of Minnesota saying that education is important. Our kids are important, and we need to fund education. And we're willing to, put forth dollars to fund our students, to fund our children, to make sure that they receive a fair, equitable, adequate, consistent, and timely education. One of the people, the groups that we didn't hear from today, was from parents. And I got an email yesterday, and I'm going to read it, and bear with me, it's a long email. But I think it's important to hear what parents and what they say. And then I got a few more things to say besides that, so you're going to have to bear with me for a while. It starts off by saying, I am a parent of four public school students in the Osceola School District and believe that high-quality public school education is essential to the future of my city, community, and the state of Minnesota. We'd all agree with that. I am writing to express my concerns regarding HF 1860. My understanding is this would amend current law to require that operating levy referendum dollars would follow students to charter schools. I oppose this legislation for several reasons. As a local voter and taxpayer, when I choose to vote to increase my property taxes for an education levy, I am choosing to support and improve the quality of schools in my school district and my community. My home values will rise or fall based on the quality of education my community's public schools provide. I know that charter schools are a type of public school, but not the type that the majority of homeowners base their decisions on. The quality of education that the local district provides is what is important. Studies show that charter schools are not providing the hoped for increases in quality of education to their students when compared to the traditional public schools. And that's debatable. I mean, I understand that, but this is from a parent. The following is a quote referencing recent research on charter schools from Stanford University. Over a period of 4 years, according to the Stanford study, only 17% of 2,400 charters in 16 states posted significantly better math gains than regular public schools. In 46% of charter schools, the study found students made about the same progress in math as their twin students at regular public schools in the same community. And 30% of charters have a disturbing and far-reaching subset of poorly performing charter schools delivering results. Charter schools bill our districts, as Superintendent Hess from Bemidji mentioned, for special education costs. Our school district provides transportation, as was also mentioned, for charter school students, and the cost of transportation is more than what we receive from the state. This basically means that dollars are taken from typical district students to cover charter school students. Our district bears the cost of researching and then educating the public about a potential levy. As parents, we are left to run a vote yes committee to attempt to educate our residents about about 75-80% of them in their district do not have children, on why they should vote for a property tax increase. Bless you. That is a good thing for the entire community. Educating will be an even more difficult task if some of the money is leaving the traditional schools and going to charter schools located in or out of our district. Thank you for taking the time to consider this information, and then the parent. So then I asked for some research and stuff about, well, how are we funding our charter schools? And according to MDE, and MDE staffer can correct me, they reported that charters in fiscal year 12 will get about $10,044 per ADM, while the district schools will get $9,756 per ADM. Then in 13, charters will get about $10,165 per ADM. This is a statewide average, and districts will get $10,049 per ADM. So it appears that, you know, we are funding, as has been suggested, our charter schools equitably, fairly, without having to take from our public schools. Now, this morning in our session, as was talked about, we talked about making jobs a priority in this session. And I hope that we do. I hope that this session is truly about jobs, because our Minnesota citizens are begging us to do that. So, Representative Woodard, on that basis, and I heard from Superintendent Hess and other superintendents, you know, do you have any kind of data, any kind of calculations? I heard how much the districts are going to lose, some of the districts are going to lose, but do we know any kind of job loss that is going to create through this, you know, through this bill, potential job loss in some of the districts, like Bemidji or Duluth or some of the other ones that get heavily hit with this? So I'm asking Representative Woodard to appeal that question.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ward, it's a great question, because when we look at jobs, we know that the primary way we can create jobs here in the state of Minnesota is to have an educated workforce. And we're talking about schools and school choice and the ability for kids to go to the schools that they choose that best fits their learning needs. And that's exactly why this is a good bill to talk about during National School Choice Week. So I would say it actually creates a lot of future jobs. As far as jobs within the traditional public school system, you know, these are dollars that are appropriated per pupil. And as Representative Quam said, you know, these kids aren't being educated in the traditional public school. They're being educated in the charter school system. So I would assume there would be no job loss within our traditional public schools, because these are kids that already aren't being educated within those walls. They're being educated outside of those walls.
And on a completely unrelated note, I always like to recognize members of the public who are in the audience. I'd like to recognize former Representative David Bly, who's here today. Thank you for joining us, Representative. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that, Representative Ward. I just have to believe, you know, if if the school district of Bemidji is losing 182,000, I think Superintendent Hess said that that is going to impact some jobs in the district of Bemidji for sure, and Minneapolis and others. So I just have to believe that, and I agree with you. The future of our job market in this nation is about education, investing in education. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, I just hope that I can't support it in the form that it's in, based on, you know, what it's going to do to, and, you know, the student that spoke so bravely and eloquently, you know, that has lost, that would possibly lose opportunities. You know, all students in the state of Minnesota have lost opportunities because of our failure to invest in and in our education process. All students have lost significant opportunities. So I agree with her, and I hope we'll continue to give passion towards funding all education, all students, that is fair, equitable, consistent, and timely in the state of Minnesota. But thank you, Representative Woodard, for pointing it out on day one, the need for that.
Representative Woodard, do you wish to respond, or can I move on to the next question?
I will respond briefly, and also because Representative Greiling, when you mentioned that as well, I'm glad that on the day of your beginning of your very last session, you had a Woodard bill to discuss, because this is a good debate that we're having on this issue, and it is raising many, many concerns throughout the entire education formula process, and I am thoroughly enjoying your first day of your last day of the session.
and may yes, you enjoy each and every one right of them from out there.
Representative Mariani.
The pleasure or the pain, right?
Can we vote on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And hello to everyone back for the session. Mr. Chair, you and I had an interesting year together last year. We fought on the same side of the alternative cert issue, and we passed a new policy in that regard in the state. And then toward the end of the session, you and I were on opposite sides of the finance. So let's see how it shakes out this year. Representative Erickson, thank you so much for your kind comments today on the floor. I greatly appreciate it. And Representative Greiling, you know my mission here for the rest of the year, since I'm your seatmate, is to work on you for several months. But I'm hoping that that formidable determination that you have shared with me turns out to be a Maginot line that I can find a way to around. Well, Representative Woodard, I actually appreciate you bringing this bill forward, and others have already eloquently stated the reason why we should be having this debate. I think it does. I think Mr. Lundell probably said it the most concisely in terms of putting on the table a much bigger conversation about the state of public funding for public schooling and K-12 schooling in Minnesota. And I was a very early adapter and very early supporter of the charter schools. And Representative Grant, I actually did miss the inaugural vote. I came in the year right afterwards. But within 9 months of that law becoming into, or that statute becoming law, there was a move to undo it. And I was this young, foolish, highly idealistic person that had never been punished as severely as I was punished right after I got up on the floor of the House and defended the nation's first charter school laws. And so I've always had great hopes and expectations of charter schools, and like to think of myself as a good champion for them. In all honesty, I think the fruits of that has been mixed. And Mr. Fan, who's a good friend of mine, alluded briefly earlier about the need to make sure we build a strong accountability system for all schools, including charter schools. And I think that's the kind of work that we need to, across the aisle, continue to work on together. But Representative Woodard, I have three questions for you, really, hopefully really quickly. One is, we note that the bill does not apply unless there's an equalized levy, and so there's school districts where this is not going to have an impact. And perhaps you can share with us what the thinking was behind that. I know sometimes we start proposing a particular principle and then sort of the details kind of get in our way. But perhaps you can share your thoughts about that disparity in the bill in terms of where it applies and where it doesn't apply, and whether you have any ideas of doing something differently in that regard.
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, I guess I would like to get a little bit more clarification from the fiscal staff on the impact that has, because it's on equalized dollars, if you could enlighten us with the difference in the two impacts, because I'm certainly interested in having that discussion.
Well, Representative Mariani, if I could just translate here, because I think you were asking if the difference between districts that have a levy and don't have a levy, or districts that are equalized and aren't equalized?
Mr. Chair, the unequalized and equalized. My understanding of the bill is we're only talking about the equalized amount, and I assume that's because that's really our ability to capture funds that come from the state. But that's not true in all school districts, unless I'm totally misunderstanding the levy
We can go
mechanism here.
To staff on this, but the bill as it's drafted right now just basically says the local property tax component is the component that would go to the charter school. The state aid portion of it already goes to whether you open enroll, whether you're in charter schools. That already takes place. So we're only talking about the local property tax component of it. But Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom, if I'm mistaken or I'm answering the wrong question, please let me know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, committee, that's correct. The bill, under current law, the equalized aid portion already follows the student. This bill says that for a student enrolled in a charter school that is located in the district of residence of the student, an aid amount equal to the levy amount, the unequalized portion, whatever the balance after equalization is, also goes to the charter school.
And so, Mr. Chair,
Mariani.
Well, thank you, and that's what hearings are for. So, Mr. Chair, then the impact would be on any school district where you've got a related, physically related charter school and a levy referendum operating.
And has a charter school in it.
Right.
That's exactly right. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your original question, but that's exactly correct. It would be limited to kids who are going to the charter public school within the district. So if they decided to go to a charter school outside of that district, of course, those local property tax dollars would not follow them.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, perhaps you can expound a little bit about why that would not be the case, because obviously the argument there would be that there would continue to be an inequity in funding relative to those children who are effectively open enrolling into another jurisdiction.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mariani, I like your thinking. I think that might not have been a bad idea. But I think the overriding principle here is that these are local property taxpayers, and they're paying for public school students who are within their school district. And I think that that prevails over the potential for those dollars following outside of the public school district.
Representative Woodard, I'll try to be quick here, Mr. Chair. The testimony from Minneapolis raised some interesting questions for me in regards to potential legal issues, and perhaps even touching on some pretty basic kind of American principles of taxation without representation. Do you have any concerns in this regard?
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, I guess I have some concerns about the way it's done today, which is it's based on public school per pupil, and it includes the charter school kids as well, but yet those dollars don't follow the charter school pupil into that charter school. So I think today this is another reason for hearings, is to kind of shed some light over that process and to make sure that we understand that when these local referendums are being presented to the public, they're presented as per pupil basis, including a number of students who are public school students who actually don't get that funding.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, I appreciate that, but it seems to me that the whole issue of a direct representation relative to taxation, one of the issues that it evokes here is the ability for the taxpayer then to respond in a negative if they're unhappy with the administration of their public resources. And so I'm struggling with this. So this is new. I just looked at the bill for the first time this morning, but it seems to me that this bears some exploring out in terms of what recourse local taxpayers would have relative to decisions of a governing body over which it has no control over, control being exercised through the electoral process. And so this could drag into a long conversation, but, you know, we can continue to have this conversation as the bill unfolds. I just want to put that forward to you. And then the final, very quick, but this would also involve longer conversation, but I want to put this out. You heard about the balance, if you will, that was put on the table that made it possible for Minnesota to pass this law in the first place and be the first in the nation to innovate. There were a number of testifiers who shared a little bit of that history. And as much as I like charter schools, I'm not convinced that there's actually a bad deal going on out there. I listened to the testimony of Representative, or rather Superintendent Dietzick and the Superintendent Tess, I think, from Bemidji. Ness?
Yes.
Who shared, pretty explicitly the fact that their school districts are, in fact, spending quite a bit of their formulas and their revenues, including cross-subsidy issues, on charter school students. I've not heard them complain about doing that, at least not proposing a bill to undo that. But they raised some pretty important issues here. And so I guess the question here is, since you're moving into tweaking the formula, and that part of the formula is rests on a balanced agreement that's enshrined in statute, are you then also considering rebalancing that? So, for instance, making charter schools responsible for the cross-subsidy of special ed, for providing community education for the community, or maybe even making themselves subject to some form of local taxpayer. I mean, are those things that you're considering thinking about or that you're playing with as you listen to the testimony and attempt to drive some kind of consensus around this legislation?
And Representative Woodard, did you hear the question? I know Representative Dabney spilled his drink over here while he was being asked. So did you?
Months ago.
I get the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you repeat the question?
No, I'm just kidding.
Representative Marion.
Well, I don't know.
No, I've got it. I think I got the gist. Representative Mariani, I listened intently as well to the testimony from the superintendents, and I think where I am in most agreement with them is that there are rules and regulations that encumber them that do not allow them to perform the duties they want to perform, in the manner they want to perform them. And I do think that's a detriment to our traditional public schools. And that's the area I would really like to spend a lot of time in this committee addressing. And I think they are spot on with that argument. However, that's a big bill. And this bill is addressing one of the inequities within that funding formula. And it has certainly sparked a lot of other discussions about other inequities and other rules and regulations that we may have imposed upon our public schools as a state legislature, as school boards, whoever is imposing these handcuffs on our traditional public schools. And that's a good discussion to have, and I'm willing to have it, and I hope somebody has a bill that that can be brought forward so we can have that discussion.
Representative Mariani, is that it?
Mr. Chair, I've already taken quite a bit of your time, but obviously this bill is evokes much bigger issues than what's before us, and I think one of the decisions we're going to have to make is whether or not we chew on a little piece and then create a whole bunch of new disbalances that need to be addressed further down the line. And I don't think you need to be for or against the bill to acknowledge that.
Sure. And I think, Representative Mariani, that's a fair point, but it's also fair to point out that when the original charter legislation was passed, there was a $1,500 per student lease levy. And that didn't stop the legislature and previous governors, and in fact, this current governor, from reducing that by 20% to $1,200. So legislation is always looked at, it's always reviewed, it's not set in stone, and certainly no previous legislature can bind, or governors can bind future legislatures and future governors. There have been funding changes to charter schools already, but your point is well noted. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions to make sure I'm understanding the facts here. And we talked a little bit about this balance that was negotiated, and it sounds like transportation funding and special ed are in the mix, and I don't think we've fully explained that and understand kind of the balance of trade, but we won't go there. I think Mr. Mariani has appropriately located that as an ongoing question and debate. But I do have some questions around the way these levies currently occur in the presentation to the voters, because I've heard some fairly significant charges about perhaps this violating a fundamental right of representation with taxation and the like. And my immediate instinct on that is, well, charter schools are subject to the most immediate and powerful will of the voters by virtue of people either coming or not coming, and so parents and kids have the ultimate choice there, and you don't really even need to go through the mechanics of referendums and votes and those kinds of things. You get to directly express your will in probably in a higher degree of freedom than through a vote. But the question is regarding referendums and the levy questions. I heard a couple of people say that they work hard for their referendums, and just a quick question for staff. What are the constraints on districts as they go out and provide information slash lobby for their referendums, and what kind of per pupil funding information is required of them to present to their districts, to their voters?
Looks like your wingman left you here, Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, sorry. I'm already making a mistake. I will attempt to struggle through. I've only been here 18 years, and I'm still considered the new guy. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Downey, the information districts are required to provide as specified in statute. They're not allowed to advocate, per se, for referendums. They are allowed to put information out. The ballot questions are stated on a per-pupil basis. I can pull up the statute and get the specifics for you. If you want to get really into the details, it may be instructive to have one of the district, one of the folks from the districts that were here talk a little bit about how they inform the potential voters about their referendums. But basically, it's supposed to be informative rather than advocating. And I don't know if that gets fully at your question.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then this is a point of ignorance on my part. For open enrollment students who enroll out of the district, when the district actually receives tax revenues, is the levy inclusive of the per pupil counts of the kids who are actually open enrolled out of the district?
Mr. Chair and Representative Downey, referendum revenue is calculated on resident marginal cost pupil units, and so if its child is served in a public school anywhere, they are a resident marginal cost pupil unit, and so they will generate referendum revenue in their district of residence. Like the charter school transfer of the equalization aid, there's a similar provision for open enrollment students, but it's calculated in a different way. It's calculated based on the equalization aid that's generated in the district that is serving the student. So, for example, if a student goes from a district that has equalization aid to a district that does not, they generate the referendum revenue in their resident district, but then since the serving district doesn't have any equalization aid, they won't generate any additional revenue for the serving district, and vice versa. If they go from a district that doesn't have equalization aid to a district that does, they will generate some, they'll bring some aid with them in that serving district.
Representative Downey, did you get that?
Yeah, I did. Thank you. The idiosyncrasies on the aid versus other is maybe a little lost on me, but if I could, maybe a question for Mr. Kronquist, if he's still here and willing to come down. We just went through a levy referendum question in my district, actually three of them. And I know my district's a little different because we're a net importer, I think, on open enrollment, and we don't have any charter schools, so this question doesn't apply. But I'm curious whether there's any kind of standard practice on the part of school districts to educate the public on the number of kids that are for whom the levy is going to actually exact taxes, but for whom the district is not going to provide service, either through the fact that they're open enrolled or that they are attending charter schools in the district.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kroonquist.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, the district is required to send out a notice to every resident, every taxpayer in the school district, and it has to explain what the tax impact is for the average household in that district. And then the question on the ballot also would include the amount of revenue per pupil that is being raised. There wouldn't be a distinction saying, well, you're raising, you know, so much for the resident students versus the charter students. That kind of information would not be available.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, and I know there's probably others who want to chime in here, but, and I remember this from my own district doing this. I don't remember seeing that information, but again, it doesn't apply there necessarily, so maybe I just wouldn't have looked closely enough. But so it appears to me that in the case of Minneapolis, for example, when they're going out to referendum, it doesn't sound like they're actually presenting to their taxpayers that, you know, $8.5 million of the levy to be collected is actually for students who aren't being served in their district in who are attending charter schools. And I don't know what the numbers would be, but I guess they're probably even higher in terms of the kids who are open enrolled. So I guess if people don't want to vote for this bill, which I support wholeheartedly, I think there's got to be some other kind of truth in advertising bill that we do support that would require districts to educate their voters on the amount of tax revenue that's being collected ostensibly under a per pupil advertisement to the district when in reality the total revenue being collected is serving a much smaller number of people than voters might think. And I want to disagree with the kind of the narrative I've heard that this bill is coming about and it's necessary because of a lack of funding. And we once again heard the implicit price deflator inflation argument, and we don't need to go down into all of that. But I think the bigger narrative here as compared to what our funding levels are is what I heard, and I was making some notes because it was kind of striking to me. Outside of the people who actually showed up from the charter schools, what we heard was people talking about their schools and their systems and their districts. And what jumped out at me more than a story about funding is the structure of how we fund, and that this whole system is designed around systems and districts and structures and boards and levies and referendums, and hardly a word was spoken about the kids and the families and how well they're being served and what kind of performance and achievement they're able to accomplish in our schools. So I support Representative Woodard's bill. I think there's two things that jumped out at me. We have a long way to go before we're really focused on kids and families. We're still really, really focused on districts and bureaucracies and big systems down here. And that's what jumped out at me, and I'd urge a yes vote on Representative Woodard's bill.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot has been said. I am probably one of the best friends of charter schools in this room. I'm also a card-carrying member of the MFT, and I teach in Minneapolis in a traditional school, in a traditional district. Obviously, we need to talk about financing. And as the chief author of the charter reform bill, we tried to cover it. It's so, well, as you're finding out, it's very complex, and clearly the ripple effect is happening right here before us. Lots of questions. What happens to charter students that enroll outside their home district? You know, does the money follow them? Referendum money? How about contract alternatives? We haven't even really talked about them yet. Choices, yours, kids. What happens? It's pretty wide open. I slipped Representative Woodard a note saying I have another bill that I haven't haven't moved yet with because I need to do some more work on it. It's coming along these lines, and he seemed open to working with me on this bill, and hopefully instead of poking both sides with a stick. And you know, the bottom line is we just haven't funded the way the state is supposed to fund our schools, whether they're traditional district schools or charter public schools. We haven't done our job. We took $3,383 from every student, every public school student in this state. And that's wrong. You know, I'm your moral compass. That's wrong.
Who's we?
I didn't do it.
Representative Slocum, sorry.
You want me to tell you who? I didn't think you really wanted me to go there. I was trying to be bipartisan and nice. My side didn't vote for that
the
shift.
Democrat Party did not increase the shift, Representative Slocum?
I don't believe so. I didn't vote for it. I didn't vote for any shift. I voted Nixo no. Absolutely not. But anyway, I'd like to work with Representative Woodard, and he has indicated he is willing to do that, if you would see fit, Mr. Chair, to do that, and see if we can come up with something where we're not poking both sides, who are hurting for money, with a stick, and find some way to compromise and look at the fairness as it ripples out to some of the other issues.
Well, my friend Representative Slocum, you certainly do not need the chair's permission nor any other member's permission to collaborate with other members of this committee, and look forward to... we've heard some complaints about Representative Woodard's solution to what is clearly a problem. We've heard some people poke holes at it, but I've yet to hear a better idea come forward. If members of the committee have some ideas on how to improve this so that dollars are actually going to those institutions that are serving children, mm-hmm. I don't want to speak for the author of the bill, but I'll speak for myself that I'm all ears. Representative Slocum, any other questions?
Well, I'd like to hear what Representative Woodard, would you be openly willing to, I mean, you gave me the nod, but I'd like to clarify, can we work on this and bring this back? To this
Representative point? Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Slocum, I was nodding to Representative Peterson.
Yeah, we're not.
No, Representative Slocum, yes, I am, and I, you know, as we were preparing for this bill, it was a couple of people approached me on House File 1460, which is your bill, and my initial look at that is it's a very interesting concept. It's a collaboration that I think is certainly worthy of a little bit more work and a little bit more insight into. I don't think that negates this House File, House File 1860. I think it's still, this is a way for us to address this inequity. And I still support House File 1860, but I am more than willing to discuss your bill with you in great length, and hope we will get a hearing on it so we can continue that discussion.
Representative
Dabney. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, when do we adjourn? I'm a little rusty on that.
Well, I think the constitutional deadline is, what, in May?
Okay. Well, then let me go to my notes.
Representative Dabney, I would like to expedite things, but I know that we did have a long presentation. We had a lot of information. I mean, I think members are still digesting this. Because there's not a committee after this, I'm being a little bit more flexible and letting comments go. So just be respectful of members of the committee's time, but talk as much as you want.
It's hard to do both. thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's go with the first one, Representative Dan.
Representative Woodard, lots out here today. Good conversation to start us off. and hard to know quite where to begin. Maybe some questions, maybe some concerns. Maybe a reminder that 95% of the children in public schools in Minnesota today are in traditional public schools. And we sometimes, I think, in the discussions here have lost track of that. That if we want to talk about equity and fairness and things like that, that 95% is a big number. And there's, you know, part of the narrative today to get fancy is that charters are underfunded in Minnesota and that it's not fair. But what MDE tells us is general fund expenditures, charters get about $1,000 more per student than traditional public schools. That wall, we ask traditional public schools to do things like provide ECFE classes and community education classes. You know, I learned how to repair windows in community education classes and lay tile. And if I wanted to, I think I learned how to cook Japanese food once. But luckily for my family, I haven't explored that. in community ed classes. And of course, we don't ask charters to do that. If we work through and your bill were actually to be implemented, charters would still get, it's projected, or would get about $1,600 more on average per pupil than traditional schools. So we would be taking an inequity that exists to some extent today on average across the state and actually exacerbating it, at which point people would come back and need to change that inequity. And, you know, is ever thus. I think part of my concern here is the concept of consequences and decisions, and the decisions have consequences. My daughter was on the school volleyball team, but she was also on a Lego robotics team, and there were points where those two conflicted, and she had to make a choice. There's consequences. My son wants to be on the church's children's choir. We're hoping he has a voice, unlike his father's, but it meets at a time that doesn't work for us. And so there may be, and at a time when he's got some other activities scheduled. So there'll be consequences to that. We give charter schools a great deal of flexibility, but we've spent years trying to make sure that if a family makes a choice, that they don't experience any consequence of that. You can go to the charter school, but you can still get on your regular high school, traditional high school's sports teams. You don't have to experience any consequence to your decisions. And that's not the way I parent, because I don't think it's good to teach my kids that there's no consequences to their decisions. And I think we're increasingly moving in that direction in this area of policy, and I'm a little troubled by that. There is another option. There doesn't need to be this perceived inequity. Self-governed schools, which is another model of school choice that's allowed in Minnesota, those schools get levy funds. There's not a conflict there between the traditional school and the self-governed school in terms of funding. So if a charter school wants to get access levy dollars on top of all the other dollars they get, Concordia Learning Academy spends more per student than the St. Paul Schools does. If they want to spend even more, they could simply become a self-governed school within the St. Paul Schools. There's choices that are available already for these folks who want to do it. I'd like to, a couple of questions for the author. At one point you talked about what the voters understand, and that, you know, your concern is that they don't understand that there's children in their district who are not served by the traditional school district when they go out and vote for a levy referendum. My contention is that they understand that their levy dollars go to their traditional school districts with that public accountability. And that if we suddenly change it in the middle of a 10-year levy, that my understanding when I voted yes has now been changed after the fact. Can you respond to changing the rules of the game on the voters and the parents in the middle of the game?
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, where to begin, which is one of your favorite favorite terms, so I'll steal it from you. First of all, perhaps we ought to consider using the funding for your Japanese food classes to actually move that over to our K-12 education if you decided not to use that with your own family. If we are funding things like Japanese food classes at the expense of our K-12 education system, I think we have another bill to take a look at. As far as consequences, this is where we kind of diverge. Okay, we diverge then that from a consequences standpoint, you think that if a family decides to choose a charter school, that they need to pay a consequence. The way I look at it is we as Minnesotans want to educate those kids, and we ought to give them the opportunity to do that. There shouldn't be a consequence for attending a charter school. We should give them the opportunity to do that and fully experience that, whether it's playing on the high school football team at a traditional public school, whatever it may be. And I think we would all agree that's a good experience for Minnesota kids. From an accountability standpoint on the referendums, this goes back to the per pupil funding, because these referendums are being proposed, as Representative Downey kind of explored here a minute ago, as kids in a per pupil that for pupils that are not part of that referendum. They're not actually receiving those dollars. So if we really go back to the core issue here, which is it's all about kids, then we should be, the money should follow where those kids are within our public school system. Those are public school dollars in a that we voted on for public school kids. And so it's a natural move that those, of course, would be covered, because we told our voters in that referendum that our per pupil rate was this. And so there are other options here, as has been discussed. One is, of course, that's not a true per pupil cost, so we need to adjust that for sure. If these kids are not going to receive those dollars, then that per pupil cost really is higher than we're giving our vote, than we're telling our voters. So there's a lot of room here for discussion, a lot of room for reform, I think, as we've had this discussion.
Sure. Representative Dabney. Hey, Representative Dabney, you know I was kidding when I said you can talk as long as you want, right?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm so disappointed in you.
This is the first day. Representative
Dabney. Thank you. Representative Woodard, I just reminded there's always consequences. My daughter entered middle school this year. She'd been attending a K-8 school. We chose to keep her in that K-8 school rather than send her to the middle school that she could have attended. Because of that, she's not learning Arabic this year. She's not learning any foreign languages here because her K-8 school doesn't offer foreign languages at the sixth grade level. The middle school that she attended requires everybody to take Arabic. There's consequences. The sports teams' options are different. The curricular options are different. There's a consequence to those choices. Consequences are okay. They're sometimes even good. I noticed that on the spreadsheet received that Blue Sky does not receive any benefit from this. Now, I'm not picking on Blue Sky. There's been plenty of stuff around them lately. They are an all-online school, and they're the only one that I know. There may be others. If somebody can name one, we can look at them in the spreadsheet instead. But they don't receive any additional revenue off of this. And if the point is that revenue is supposed to go to the kid, why isn't revenue going to the kid behind the computer as well as the kid who walks in the door?
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dabney, sounds like an interesting bill, and I hope that you take a look at that one. I don't know what Blue Sky's status is today, quite frankly. I haven't followed where Blue Sky stands in the charter school community, so I'm not sure whether or not they still exist or not. I quite frankly don't know the answer to that. I assume as fiscal staff went through this, and maybe we can get some comment from fiscal staff as well, that it's difficult to tie those kids. Maybe they're not being counted as the public education, as the public school student within those referendum dollars. It's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that, Representative Dabney. I would actually refer to fiscal staff on that.
Well, I can answer the question. I mean, the data we have in front of us is based on RMCPU, and so that would tell us that there, wherever Blue Sky is domiciled, whatever school district that's in, that they do not have students in that district that attend there with an operating levy. Those are the three categories that have to take place in order for the numbers to be in there. Representative Dabney.
Right. Well done, Mr. Chair. Last, and I'll wrap up, I'm fearing that this bill goes the direction, pushes us further along the direction, unhealthy direction that we've been going, of pitting charter schools and traditional public schools. And what that does, Representative Downey, is ignore the kids. Because there aren't charter school kids and traditional public school kids. There's kids. And they go back and forth between the two, as Concordia Learning Academy testified. And what we've set up in the state is an unhealthy competitive situation where there's bitterness and acrimony rather than cooperation and planning in the best interest of the children. And this bill, I fear, sends us further down that route, and I believe that is the wrong direction for the kids of the state.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We have had good testimony today on both sides of the issue. And I have a question. Maybe one of our superintendents could comment on the mechanics of how you come up with a referendum amount. I would assume that a school district, when they determine they need additional funds, comes up with a dollar amount you need, and then would break that down into a per pupil number for the voters to better understand. So would it be safe to say that if this bill became law, you would have to inflate that figure by 27% to get the actual dollar amount that you needed for your district? Could somebody comment on that?
one of the superintendents want to answer? I mean, Representative Anderson's point, I mean, your point is that right now we, I mean, I'll take the other side of it, is that we artificially state what the per pupil amount is because we're factoring students that are not served by the traditional school. But if we were to change that to, using my words, not yours, a more accurate number, then, yeah, that number would be higher because we're basing it off of the number of students that are being served. But if one of the superintendents is at a, oh, yeah, welcome, doctor.
You're right.
Representative Anderson.
Anything else you want to ask? No, seriously, if we're, you know, when we're budgeting, if we're short, you know, we have a renewal. Our district, particularly, we have a renewal of about, I think it's a $500 one coming up next year. But then again, when we go through the budget process, you know, if this would happen, we'd be short another $400,000. We'd have to calculate, you know, per pupil what that would mean, and that's what we'd have to run and advertise for our excess levy.
Representative Anderson.
No, I appreciate the answer, and just my point is that I think the districts, if they have this need, have a dollar amount need, and it's just divided out to a per pupil basis to make it easier to understand. So it's a lot of good things to talk about, and I appreciate your answer, but just to clarify that question, thanks.
And doctor, to that point then, is it fair to state then, if Representative Anderson's right, that under the current law, we do misstate to the citizens what we're raising per pupil?
I don't know if I can answer that.
Yeah, you can.
One comment I did want to make, though, when you start talking about state averages and what charters are funded, what the average is, you know, if you look specifically at our district, we're actually $1,000 below the state average. And I have an $18 million hole less than the metropolitan average of districts every year that I have to fill. So when you start talking averages, you know, they're okay in certain areas, but that's why anything like this really affects, you know, our district.
Right, and when people use statewide averages, we know that the charter school student population is vastly different than the statewide student population. So those are factual, and they are accurate, but as members of the committee know, they need to be taken with a grain of salt. But, doctor, just to be clear, though, you answered Representative Anderson's question pretty clearly. It's fairly obvious that right now the number of students listed on a ballot initiative does not correspond to the number of students served in a district. I mean, that's, if you don't want to answer it, it's,
well,
okay.
Well, it's different in every district.
In a, well,
you know, as far as
the resident marginal cost,
your incoming student, your open enrollment students in and out, you know, all that varies from district to district.
Yeah, and doctor, the levies are based off of RMCPU, and student count is ADM. Those are, in law, we prescribe two different measurements. So I was just hoping maybe I could get a year right out of you, too, but thank you very much.
Give it to him.
You're right, Mr.
Doctor. One a day.
One a day, right. Representative Dietrich, and then Representative Reinert, and we'll be done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, as a strong supporter of adequate education funding, you hate to be here talking against a certain segment of students getting more education funding, especially if they are, if they do generate less revenue by an already inequitable system. And so much of what I could say has already been said, so I'm going to just focus on in one area, and that is, it's been said many, many times that the current system is inequitable to the charter school system. And I would say that this bill even increases that inequity for other students. And it does so by the fact that I just did the quick math, and it takes money away from about 350,000 students in the state based on two things that has nothing to do with those students, choices that those students did not make. First of all is that there's a charter school within their district. And what I'm learning here is that charter schools are not in all, but in everybody's districts that are sitting around, even around this table, and that they have passed a levy. And if they have passed a levy, there are so many different reasons why. And in many cases, it is because they don't already receive average state funding. So what I would just, and then on top of that, from the students that do get money taken away, that ranges. For some students, it's $2 per pupil, and then for some kids, it's going to be up to $594 per pupil. So I would say that this just exasperates the inequity in the system that we have, and this is not the approach that we should be taking. And if we think that there is an inequity in the charter school funding, then I wish that we would approach it that way, very isolated, and actually fix the problem and not exasperate something that we already have going. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Woodard, did you want to respond, or should I go to Representative Reiner?
No, I think we've discussed it.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The benefit of being last is that there's little left to say, so I will try to be brief. I want to start by saying that I am opposed to this bill, but it has nothing to do with an opposition or a judgment about the quality of our charter schools or the work that's being done in our charters to reduce the achievement gap or any of those issues. It has to do with the whole package, the historical record on the agreement out of which charters were funded, and yes, there's been changes there, and yes, the legislature can choose to change things in a piecemeal fashion, but that doesn't make it a wise decision. And I think it's a really unwise decision to isolate this issue and treat it out of context with the whole array of issues around funding, both for charters and traditional public schools. So that's one point. But I also have a grave concern about the nature of our independent school districts and the kind of the role of independent school districts through our Constitution, and how our public schools have been funded and created, and what a levy is a contract between voters and an elected board. It's, school board members are directly responsible to their voters. And that's a really significant feature of the responsibility for those dollars. And I don't think we can look at shifting levy dollars to charter schools without addressing the issue of elected public representation on boards.
Any other closing comments or questions from members of the committee? Very briefly, Representative Woodard, before you close, I just want to thank you for having you bring this forward. I will say that this is the issues of how charter schools are treated from traditional schools is not an easy one. There's always legislative history. I want to thank you for your work that you did last session. Until last year, the permanent school fund didn't go to charter schools. Even though they're public school students, those dollars didn't go to charter schools. And as a result of the bill we passed last year with Governor Dayton in this legislature, for the first time here next month, we're going to see charter schools pupils receive that funding. And so there are these are controversial issues. I've heard people say they have concerns about your bill, but there's been high level of concerns and low level of solutions. So I want to thank you for bringing this forward. And Representative Woodard, do you have the closing remarks?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to thank this committee as well for, one, hearing this bill. But, two, Minnesota really does have a strong history in school choice. And a lot of the people in this room made that happen. So Minnesotans, thank you for that. I do think that this really does illuminate an issue that we have within the levy system here, where we are misstating how many public school students are being served on a per-pupil basis on these levies. And so while this, I believe this is a good solution to this problem, I enjoyed the discussion today and will enjoy furthering this discussion as the session progresses. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Woodard moves that House File 1860 be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Members, we do not have committee tomorrow. However, we will be meeting on Thursday. So thank you, members. With that, the committee is adjourned.